Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Welcome one and all to Storybox, the place to be if you are a lover of stories, learning, growth, and you want to improve your life. My name is Jay Phantom, and I've made it my purpose to unbox and share the amazing stories from people of every profession all over the world. I am truly grateful that you have decided to listen in today. Now let's journey into the story box together and hear more about whose story will be unboxed today. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Storybox. My friends, this one is going to be deep, real, authentic, inspiring, you name it. It's all of the above, because my next guest is not just an artist of life, but some have labeled her an impact entrepreneur. Her name is Alexi Panos. And while others would say that she is a thought leader, she's also a best-selling author and speaker. And others have also claimed her to be a boss mama. She has the cutest twins and even a toddler as well. But she believes it is all just amazing forms of art. Through her art, Alexi is able to teach you how to be insanely committed to empowering and activating your own greatness and live a life that you are completely obsessed with. She is on a mission to reinvent personal development into what her husband and herself call emergent wisdom movement. She has created a container of transformational work that elicits a remembrance of what you've always known and who you've always known yourself to be. She's also signed, it's a fun fact, she was also signed to a major record label at 17, which we get into. Is just such a fascinating, deep conversation. There's so much value and wisdom in here that I know is going to really uplift you and make you feel inspired. But Alexi does not just the business side of things and empowering others, but she also has an organization of a nonprofit organization, I should say, called EPIC. Everyday People Initiating Change. She runs, she goes to a community in Africa helping them, which I think is absolutely incredible. I say incredible a lot, I know, for those people that are wondering, but it is truly, truly incredible the kind of work that Alexi does and the amount that she does give back. So I know you guys are going to really, really love it. And in saying that, I know I say this a lot, but please share it around to your friends and anyone that you feel might benefit from hearing this story. And let us know what you think by leaving a rating and review over on Apple Podcasts. It goes a long way in reaching more and more people with these stories, and it builds the Storybox community. So with that being said, my friends, I know I've waffled on a lot. I do that. I apologize. But you guys know what time it is. It's time to dive into the story box and hear the boss mama herself, Alexi Panos, share her story.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so grateful to be here.
Thank you so much for making the time. I'm really grateful that you were able to do this. Before we dive into your backstory and how you got started doing all this, how you became a boss mama and everything like that, I usually have one question that I ask all my guests at the start, which is, okay, what does success look like to you?
Oh, man, you know, I think the general description I would give for success is it's ever-changing and it's present moment awareness. So what that looks like for me right now is really locking in on what matters most to me, living my values every single day, which is family, contribution, and growth. And if I live those every single day, I'm killing it. and I'm successful. So that makes it really easy for me to be successful because I can design my life in that way that it reflects what matters most to me. So I wake up every day excited to get at it and also go to sleep every night feeling really, really complete with my day.
How come you get up every single day excited to conquer life? Like, that's not a usual mindset for a lot of people to have. How did you create this mindset for yourself?
Yeah, you know, it's decades of work. Like, truthfully, I've been in the game of personal development for myself, not just as a teacher, but for myself since I was a teenager. And, you know, I've learned from a lot of the masters in our industry and the ones that, you know, had passed away before I even came to this planet. But I'm an avid reader, and I just really learned from people who lived extraordinary lives and took note. And one of the things I noticed was gratitude was the common thread with all these incredible people who created incredible worlds for themselves and for others. Gratitude was always there. And it doesn't mean I don't get up and sometimes I'm super tired because my babies have me up all night. You know, like right now, that's currently the season I'm in because they're teething. So I'm up all night. I'm trying to get them back to sleep. I'm sleeping for like 20-minute pockets at a time. And, you know, usually I'm not that thrilled when I don't get a ton of sleep. But I get to wake up and be so grateful and choose gratitude to say, wow, I'm here. I'm able to mother my children. I have these amazing children that are healthy and able-bodied and beautiful hearts. Like, how blessed am I? And it's just a choice, right? Because I could also choose to focus on all the things that aren't working. You know, we've got the pandemic happening. We've got you know, no sleep happening in my world. We just moved and there's a lot of stuff to do and loops that need to be closed. But I just choose to focus on what is working and what I can bring every single day to the table and what's being brought to me from life.
I love how you mentioned the gratitude is a choice aspect and the blessings part, because every single time that I send an email to somebody or I'd send a text message at the very end, I say, be blessed. And
yes,
it's very different, but I want people to understand that no matter what circumstance you're in life, there is a blessing to be had and you can always, always be blessed. It's your choice whether or not you want to be or not.
Yes. And that's powerful. Oh, that's so powerful, because I can't tell you how many people I've come across, and I work with people all over the world from all different backgrounds. So many people are so committed to their victimhood. They're so committed to how their life isn't working. And they'll often come to me and say, oh, well, easy for you to say because insert why my life is better than theirs, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, it's easy for you to say because you're young. It's easy for you to say because you've got a successful business. It's easy for you to say. And it's like, yeah, but I've met people all over the world who do not have extraordinary circumstances that are quote unquote positive. I've met people who are quadriplegics. I've met people who are born into absolute poverty with no clean water, no doors on their homes, but are able to create an extraordinary life for themselves and for their community. So it's like, yeah, I get it. I'm definitely privileged and blessed, as are you. But it is the choice to be blessed even when things in your external world don't seem like they're going your way. It's a choice.
I love how you mentioned you've seen people that don't really have what we have. I used to work with disabled people, and it was a tremendous, tremendous experience because I learned something that I'll never forget. That I remember this one particular story. I was taking this disabled old guy. He had Down syndrome. Beautiful, beautiful human being. I took him to the place that he was staying for the rest of the day. He turns around and he looks at me and he's like, pick me up later. And then he gives me this massive hug. And I was like awestruck at his attitude. Like, it was just a beautiful moment. And when I picked him up later in the afternoon, he was so excited to actually see me. I could not believe it. And I'll never forget those little moments in my life where these people, they don't have the same brain capacity. They don't have the same life as me, yet they are some of the most happy, joyful, blessed, grateful people you'll ever meet in your life. And I'm curious for you, Alexi, has there been somebody in your life, or has there been an event or a moment that has given you a renewed perspective on your life?
Yeah, I mean, I'm 37 now. And when I was 20 years old, I started a nonprofit organization with one of my best friends. And we've been going out to Africa every single year, working directly with communities, not doing charity work, but truly like working with the communities, living with them and finding sustainable solutions for growth. And in that process, over the course of the years, I've met so many people, just like what you were just saying, that you look at them from an outsider's Western perspective and go, man, these people really don't have that much. Like no clean water, no running water. Like they're walking 4 hours one way to go get a bucket full of dirty, contaminated water. Maybe that's if it's rainy season, right? And that, I mean, that's like all the cards stacked against you, just that alone. And yet, year after year, I continue to meet, just like you said, the most extraordinary people with the most loving hearts, with like filled with abundance. You know, they don't know that they're poor, and I'm using air quotes, because they don't consider themselves poor. They consider themselves wealthy in spirit. And they look at a lot of us Westerners and think we're poor because we're poor in spirit. And I agree. I think our society is damaged in such a great capacity because of consumerism and the desire to keep building and go more and more and more and more and more. And yet we're not even happy with what we have. We're not even present to what we have. And that creates the disease of the heart, where we're always longing for something out here, a better body, a better relationship, more money, more success. And we're missing the life that's right in front of us. And that is suffering, period. And again, like these people who, in my experience, don't have the most basic needs have taught me how to find joy and gratitude and hope and love and community in the smallest things. And that has and continues to give me a renewed sense of clarity in my life and just brings me back to the basics every single time.
Do you still have that organization at the moment?
I do. It's called EPIC and it stands for Everyday People Initiating Change. So we haven't gone out to Africa this year, obviously because of COVID. But it's just something that I'll have for the rest of my life. You know, it's, I have a second family out there that literally is like, they're waiting to meet my babies. They're like, when do we get to meet our grandchildren? I'm like, I know they're coming. They're coming.
Why did you decide to begin EPIC, this EPIC journey?
Yeah. Well, super long, crazy story.
I love long condensed stories.
Okay. I'll try to condense it for the listeners, but, I was signed to a music contract when I was a teenager. I actually entered a contest for like a girls group. This is like back when like Spice Girls and all that was a big thing. And I entered a singing contest and they pulled me aside and offered me a solo deal. Now I'm not a great singer, but I can carry a tune and with a little recording help, auto tune, I sound all right. But I'm a performer. I can dance. I grew up, you know, in plays and all that stuff. So I'm comfortable on stage. And I essentially get put into a development deal at the age of 15 with a phenomenal producer who was working with Michael Jackson and Whitney Houston and Brandy and Monica and Destiny's Child, like killing it. And then from there, I got signed to Def Jam as a solo artist and traveled the world from like age 17, 18 till about 21. And in that time, I had kind of like, it was like almost the Wizard of Oz moment where I had this illusion of what was going to make my life better. You know, like, oh, if I'm famous and I'm making a lot of money and people know who I am, I'm going to be happy. And I was fortunate enough to travel the world with some of the top artists at the time. I was opening for them and traveling with them, learning the ropes. And I got to see behind the velvet curtain. I got to see what most of us never get to see, which is the reality of fame, the reality of what it takes. And I was humbled. You know, I got caught up in it for a little bit and traveled all over Europe and Asia, and Africa was our last stop. And I was kind of doing this like rock star party lifestyle as a teenager, which was a dream for me, until I had a wake up moment actually in South Africa where it just all hit me like a ton of bricks. I took a look at the environment, the actual environment we were in, and we had just played a show and we just went to a club and spent a bunch of money on champagne. And here we are getting back on the tour bus. And then there's what they call a shanty town of middle-class working people in this particular community that are all sitting by their little coal fires, selling bread, selling chips, like hustling. And I was just like, man, we just spent $3,000 in a club on champagne. And like, what could that money do if it was put to use and invested in people, right? Versus spent on excess. And it just hit me. And that night I journaled for like 3 hours on the bus. And it's just like, who have I become? I've become this like shelled version of myself that completely sold out for the promise of my ego being glorified. And it just hit me. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. So I essentially came back to New York City where I was living at the time and got a regular job. I started waitressing and I was like, I need to bartend. I need to waitress. I need to do whatever I need to do to pay for my life, because I don't want to do this anymore. I met my friend Tennille and we started talking. I was like, I want to give back. I want to do something. I don't want my life to be about taking. I want my life to be about giving and contribution. But I don't know if I can do it because I don't have a platform. I don't have a ton of money. I don't, you know, all the excuses. I don't have the time. I don't have the knowledge. And we sat on the idea for about 6 months. And then it hit us one day. It's like, we don't have to be Angelina Jolie or Bono or any of these like world famous people to make a difference. We just have to be an everyday person who wants to initiate change in the world. We just have to say, today's the day where we start. And we started in New York, then where we were living at the time, we started doing local stuff. And we made a commitment because my partner, she lived in Africa for a little bit too. So we both had a connection there. We said, let's go back to Africa. Let's stay with people. Let's go to a community and live in their home and talk to them and ask them how we can support. What can we do? And so we did that. And we went to Tanzania. We stayed at our now Bibi's house. She's like our mother. We stayed at her house and we asked her like, hey, can you take us around to some of your friends? And just, can we talk to them? She's like, of course. And so she brought us house to house and we learned so much in those conversations. Cause at the time, nobody was talking about clean water. They were talking about malaria. They were talking about hunger and they were talking about AIDS. So we for sure thought it would be one of those tracks. And they were all like, we need water. We were like, wait, you guys don't have clean water? We don't even have running water. It's like, wait, what? And our minds were just blown. And then the women took us for a walk to go see where they collect their water. And it was just like, it just cracked open our minds and our paradigm of how people live in the rest of the world. And it was that moment that we said, you know what? We're going to come back. We're going to figure this out. We don't know how, but we'll come back and we will fund a project in this community. And that's how it started. 1 year after 1 year after 1 year, we just made one promise each year to one community, to one group of women, and said, we will back you. We will support you. We don't know how. And we hustled our butts off in New York to make it happen. But it's incredible. And it's been literally one of the greatest teachers and one of the most humbling experiences of my life.
That is absolutely beautiful. I have so many questions just coming from that story. This is one of the reasons why I love long stories, is because there's so much to unbox there.
Yes.
But one of the things that I do want to ask is, how long did it actually take you from you leaving the industry to going and starting Epic? How long was that process?
It was within 12 months. I don't know the exact amount, but it was within a year. Within a year. We sat on the concept of like, we want to do something. And within that same year's time, we had a trip booked to Tanzania.
Wow. So pretty short in case of time. But another question that I'm curious about, was it hard for you to give up that life for the money, the fame, all those accolades? Was it hard? And were you afraid to actually give it up and go do something else?
I was. You know, it's interesting because I've had like multiple iterations and brushes with fame. So it's interesting. We started Epic, right? And at first it was like, I was so happy to be out of the industry. The music industry felt very toxic to me at the time. You know, now we have the Me Too movement, but like that was my life every single day of like being essentially approached and having my career like dangled in front of me. If I didn't have sex with someone, if I didn't, you know, go to this party with someone, and I was always constantly on the defensive, like protecting myself. So I was exhausted, like emotionally exhausted from that. And realizing like I wanted nothing to do with that industry. So I felt good with that. But it's interesting because once we started Epic, we had to fund these projects, which were expensive projects because we're drilling for water. So we had to get rigs. It's like drilling for oil. We had to get rigs. We had to get equipment, cement, like all this stuff. We had to have technicians and engineers come. So it's like $15,000 usually for each project. And it's like, man, and we're like 20-year-olds in New York with just trying to figure out how to live, you know, off peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and ramen noodles. So I was like, okay, I can bartend, I can waitress, but I used to model back in the day when I was like an early teenager. I was like, let me get back into that because I make good money and it's flexible and yada, yada, yada. So I actually got back into modeling in my 20s, and then that turned into television hosting and became pretty successful at that. And it was great because it funded and fueled a lot of what we were doing with Epic. But it was interesting because I felt those little brushes of like, okay, this is where you're going to be tested, Lex. Like, you're going to be tested here. Are you going to sell out and take that job because it pays a lot of money? Or are you going to be aligned with your values? And I'd say 95% of the time, I was like, nope, that's not aligned. There were some things that were a little gray that I made excuses for because I was like, you know what? It's going to be a good paycheck and it can get me back to Africa sooner. So not that it was hard to leave it, but it was tempting to go into something that I knew I could do and make a lot of money from in order to fuel what I was committed to. Mm-hmm. And that temptation for the easy road shows up all the time. Like even with social media nowadays, like I know the exact strategy that I would need to do in order to blow up on social media. So the temptation's there, but I'm not interested. It's like, I want nothing to do with that because if it doesn't feel good in this now moment with who I am and where my values are and what matters to me, I'm a no, because the cost is too high to my integrity to stay on that.
I feel like I've had a similar experience like last year because I was in real estate, and when I left, I was very good at it. So when I left, I was actually headhunted by another real estate company. Then I was also given an opportunity out of 180 applicants down to a group of six for a major recruitment company here in Sydney, Australia. And there were other jobs. I was actually offered a contract with the potential of going higher in the company. And, you know, you're given all these promises, but yeah. I had for so long didn't listen to my gut telling me yes or no, take that road, don't take that road, watch out for all the signs. And yeah. For the first time in my life, I actually said, I'm going to listen to what my gut's telling me. And even though the attraction for the financials were there because I didn't have any money, I was surviving off, I think I had $3,000, $4,000 in the bank account with bills piling up like you would not believe. And yeah. I had to make some very difficult decisions. But I realized that if I wasn't true to what I wanted, my purpose, and my values, then I was going to be miserable for the rest of my life, no matter what I did. And it was a very difficult decision to actually turn down these jobs because they were very, very attractive. And I knew if I had taken them, I would have done extremely, extremely well at them because that's just my mindset. But, and I remember turning one of them down. And she says to me, no matter what you do, Jay, whether or not you're going to be doing this or something else, she's like, you're going to be successful at it because you have that mindset. And I was like, thank you. She wasn't sour at all. Like she was understanding. And then after I did that, I went a completely different route. Like I started working with disabled people. I started uni, and at the same time I started this. And it's an amazing, amazing journey when you actually listen to your heart and what that's telling you, and you service that and you be true to it, then something's amazing can come out of it, which is what I believe happened with you. It's an inspiration.
Well, I love that you've walked that path too. And I think it's so important that people hear this from multiple people who've lived different stories, right? And that's why I love your podcast, because if we don't have deep meaning in our lives, no matter how much money you're making, no matter how famous you are, no matter how much respect or significance or recognition you're getting from whoever, there will be an empty hole somewhere deep in your soul that you will try to fill with more money, more stuff, more admiration, more validation, and it will never get full because it's not meant for anything else except meaning. And I think it was Jim Carrey who said this. It may not be, but I think it was him who said, I hope everybody becomes super wealthy so that they understand that that means nothing. You know? Okay. So I love Jim Carrey. And I was like, I think it's Jim Carrey, but it's so true. And I want to say that is one of the gifts I've had because I got to meet so many like extraordinarily famous people, not like, oh, they're kind of famous. Like everyone in the world knows all these people that I got to meet and spend time with and kind of see into their lives. I got to see that a ton of money and a ton of significance and fame doesn't equal happiness. In fact, it equals in the majority of cases a lot more misery, because the promise of happiness is what they bought into. And then they got there and they don't have it. Now they're like, well, there's something wrong with me because I'm supposed to be happy. And so I got to meet these wealthy people and see that even like some of the top wealthiest people in the world, like top five wealthiest people in the world, I got to spend a lot of time with. And I got to see that all he wanted was a relationship with someone who wanted to be with him and not his money. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, I saw it enough to tell me that meaning is the goal. Meaning. And that's what you did. And that's what I really love about your story is you sought meaning. You had the opportunity and like the shiny object dangled in front of your face, and you could have gone that way. However, you chose meaning, university, learning, working with disabled people, contribution. I'm sure you learned and grew so much through that experience as well. And also creativity with a podcast that gives you deep meaning. And the question for any of you listening out there is, what would bring your life meaning, your soul meaning? And if you can follow that breadcrumb, you're solid. You're like so solid.
100%. There's so much more to the story that I didn't actually share. But you know, when I did start this, nobody knew who I was, and there were millions of other podcasts out there. So why in the world would they want to listen to me? And it was just like this massive journey of one after the next, just one. When someone would believe in me, then go to the next one. And I just created this mindset of persistence, just being persistent as I possibly can, of being true to myself and what I wanted. And even though it was hard, even though you got a lot of rejection, I ended up becoming comfortable with the rejection because I knew that the mission and the purpose of it was so much bigger than the rejection. And it wasn't a matter of if for me, it was a matter of when. So if I could persevere through it all, then it would be okay. And I am the happiest, the most fulfilled, the most satisfied I've ever been, even though it is difficult, even though it is tiring. But I have amazing connections, amazing conversations that, like what you're talking about, meeting all these incredible famous people, that long for that connection, that long for that meaning in life. And I love asking at the very beginning, what is success? Because it sets up life for the person. Yeah. It really does. And I'm always curious. Like, that's what I tell people. Be curious, learn. Because when you learn, you grow. And when you grow, you feel complete. You feel satisfied because we weren't meant to be stuck. We weren't meant to be stagnant. We were always meant to grow. So I thought I'd share that as well.
I love that. And you actually shared something that I want to just circle back to, because I think it's really important to double down on this concept, is just because it's meaningful to you doesn't mean it's going to be easy. And I think that's important for people to hear. I'm going to say it again. Just because it's meaningful to you does not mean it's going to be sunshine and rainbows. Oh my gosh, this is the easiest path of least resistance. No, sometimes it's the most challenging thing we can do, because we're up against ourselves. We're up against the temptations of the world and society and who we're supposed to be. And that's the payoff, right? Like, that is the gift. The gift is every single day you get to show up and better your best as a person. Yeah, sure. Maybe it's one day you have the best podcast in the world, or maybe one day you've got all this recognition as the best motivational speaker in the world. But until that day comes, if that day comes, who cares? You get to become the best version of you and live your dharma, live your mission every single day. Wow. That's the gift. And it's not necessarily easy. So I just want to like double that message down, because I feel like I end up coaching so many people that are like, it's so hard. And I'm like, yes, it's supposed to be hard. You know, like, the imposters are weeded out. And that's a line I always say, time will weed out the imposters. If you're not really truly committed to your meaning and your dharma and your purpose, bye, because it's hard.
Yeah. I love how you doubled down on that. I'm writing a book at the moment that it's about my life and all the crazy things that I've been through. And I'm only 24. So, but there's a lot in there. Trust me.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I've called it The Path of an Eagle, because the way my life verse is from Isaiah 40 verse 31, which basically talks about renewing your strength and hoping in the Lord and soaring. Like, have you ever seen an eagle spread its wings before it does it? It looks at where it's going, like it's focused, and then it opens up its wings and takes flight. So for me, even though it is hard, even though sometimes it is difficult, I use an analogy of two people, two totally different mindsets. The first person has a growth mindset. He wants to grow. He wants to learn. He wants to improve. And the second person doesn't have a growth mindset. He wants everything to be easy and come to him straight away. They are about to climb a mountain. There are only two paths to this mountain. The first path is the hardest, the one with the most challenges, you know, pain, bruising, battering and bloodied and you name it. The second path is the easiest, straight to the top. In fact, you can do it three times and still beat the person that's going up the first path. So the first person goes to the base of the mountain. He notices both paths, and then he decides to take the first path, even though it is challenging, because he knows that once he reaches the top, he's going to feel this next level of satisfaction, even though he hasn't even done it yet. He just has faith. So he starts climbing the mountain. The second person walks up to the base of the mountain, sees both paths. He sees the person that took the first path. He's struggling. He doesn't like it. He goes into flight mode. I want to protect myself. That looks too hard. I don't want to do that. So I'm going to take the second path, the one that's easiest, straight to the top. Of course, the second person gets to the top straight away, and he's watching this person that is climbing the first path struggle. The moment the guy reaches the top of the mountain, he's smiling, and he asks him, "Why are you smiling?" He said, "Because I just climbed that. Look at that. Yep. That was extremely hard. How do you feel?" Yeah. He says, "I don't feel any different." And I think that's like a lot of people, is they don't want to climb. They want the easy path a lot of the time. They don't want the challenge. They don't want the struggle. And the reason why I titled my book The Path of an Eagle is because an eagle soars high above the rest. They don't worry about the challenge.
Yeah.
Even if they have a challenge, they go higher. So, yeah.
I love that. I love that. And that reminds me so much of like an old adage that I live by. It's who you become in the process. Mm. That is the win, right? And for me, that's what that story illustrates is the guy who took the hard path, he felt like he was changed. He felt like he had to overcome himself. He felt like he had to dig deep and push harder and go to his edge and then cross it and find his next edge, where the other guy maybe had a great walk and like looked around and took the scenery in, but he wasn't expanded as a human being. He didn't become a deeper, more authentic version of himself, because he never had to face off with the initial fear of doing it the hard way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really pertinent in today's world, because we live in a quick fix, get rich quick society where everybody wants it yesterday. And when they put in, God forbid, 3 months of work and nothing happens, they're like, I'm just going to quit because I'm not getting the traction I'm supposed to be getting. Mm-hmm. And I always say, well, what's supposed to, like, tell me what that's supposed to look like. Oh, well, I made a video and I only got 10 likes. I'm like, okay, well, my first 10 videos only have like 5 views on it. It's like, you got to start somewhere. And then are you looking at that and going, okay, like, have I reached out to people? Have I exhausted all paths to make this what it needs to be? And until you can say yes to that, keep going.
And the thing is, you don't know who's actually watching, who those 5 views are either.
Right. And that's what I say too. Who was it? Justin Bieber.
Yes.
Right. So Justin Bieber was like a YouTube, just like doing stuff on YouTube, singing, doing all his thing. He got enough views for people to be like, oh, this is a talented kid. But when Scooter Braun saw Justin Bieber, it was the one of you that actually mattered. Right. And that's what I tell my clients. It's like, okay, do you want a million views of people that are like, meh, she's okay? Or do you want one view from a person who is highly influential, who is going to like fully go, oh my God, I want to back this person. I want this person to come into my organization and coach my entire team. Like, all it takes is one person to change the entire trajectory of your life, your business, your relationship, your family, like one decision, one moment, one person. And I think people are so focused on quantity versus quality. And that's a very important distinction. Mm.
And the thing is, you never know. So
don't know.
Keep going.
Keep going. That's it.
Alexi, I want to be mindful of your time. I have a couple more questions for you, if you don't mind. I'm curious about how you met your husband, Preston.
What's
behind that?
Yeah, that's a really good, very long story, but condensed version is I actually met his college roommate in London, and I was out in London with somebody else. I was exploring. We were friends, but we were kind of seeing like, should we be dating? Because we're really good friends and da 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 da. And it was like a guy's weekend with him and all his friends. And one of his friends was Preston's college roommate. So this guy was like, man, you are the female version of this dude I went to college with. You guys have to work together. You're up to similar stuff. So it was like under the work pretense. He connects us on Facebook. We exchange a couple of messages. I don't think anything of it, right? I'm like, oh yeah, whatever. I'll let you know when I'm in LA next. 2 weeks later, I end up at this event in Venice, in Los Angeles, California, and I'm late, which I'm never late for anything, but my friend and I swapped tickets. So we both had tickets to the show. She had Friday night tickets. I had Saturday night tickets. She called me Friday night, last minute. Hey, can you swap with me? Something came up. I'm like, sure, why not? So I'm rushing to get to this show. It's completely sold out. There's no seats. The guy's like, hey, you know what? Wait on the wall for a second. I'm going to build a row in the front. Hang out. I'm like, okay. So I'm hanging out with my friend. He sits me and my friend down. And then Preston was running late to the same event with which he was on a blind date for, that he didn't want to go on, but he had a very clear indication that he should go from Spirit, because he was like in a deep meditation practice. So he checked in and Spirit was like, go. So he gets there, he's late. He's never late for anything either. They put him on the wall. They end up seating him and his date right next to me and my friend. And he goes, Alexi from London. And I'm like, oh, I live here. He's like, wait, you live in Los Angeles? I thought you lived in London. And he's like, didn't you meet my friend there? I'm like, yeah, but I live here. He's like, we got to meet up. So we plan a date. For me, it was like a work meeting. For Preston, it was a date. But I was under the context that we're going to work together. So we have this first meeting and we're talking about vision. I'm asking him all these questions, like, tell me what you're up to. At the time, he was doing something called the Left Mob. I was like, that's so amazing. Where do you see yourself in 5 years with this? All the things. Cause I'm like, how can we work together? That's my context. Then he starts asking me, like, so tell me about your love life. Are you dating anybody? And I'm like, wait a second. Like, this guy's into something else right now. But it turned into this like 3.5 hour long meeting where we end up walking the streets of Larchmont and we're really connecting. And I'm starting to think to myself, like, wow, this guy is, he is really the female or the male version of me. And I am the female version of him. And this is really cool because I've never met anyone up until that point that was into growth and contribution as much as I was. I was always kind of like the leader of that in my friend groups and my relationships. And people were always like, wow, that's so inspiring. But I never met a man who like inspired me in that way. And so I was honest with him. I said, listen, I'm dating somebody. I'm not really sure about how I feel about him. Like, we're kind of exploring things. He's a friend. Blah, 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 blah. And he was like, okay. And so we just hung out. We hung out literally every single day for 30 days as friends. We went to go see Marianne Williamson. We went to book signings. We went to workshops. We watched documentaries. And it was just like, oh my God, this is like my dream person. This is what the guy I'm currently dating doesn't have. The one thing he doesn't have, because he was like perfect on paper, except he didn't have growth as one of his highest values. And Preston did. And that was a definitive thing for me. After 30 days, I was like, you know what? This is my guy. And Preston kind of laid it out. He's like, listen, I know what this is. And until you know what this is, like, I want to take my name out of the hat because I don't want to share you with anybody. Like, you're my wife. And I was like, wow. Okay. Called everyone. I was like, all right, this is my dude. Canceled it with the other guy. And then we've been together ever since.
Wow. Another amazing story. That
so good.
Incredible. Like, I'm curious about when was the moment and how long did it take you to actually fall in love with Preston?
It's so interesting because falling in love, rising in love, being in love, I think it starts the first time, the first moment, because I think we have to rationalize ourselves out of it and go like, oh, it's too early or it's too da da da. But it really started from that first moment of just like hearing how passionate he was about humanity and people living their best life and love being the meaning of life. And it was like, yeah, I love this person. Like, I love your outlook. I love your viewpoint. I love how you see the world. And then at that point, it's just every single day from that first time was me talking myself into the love that I was feeling and talking myself out of the fear that was coming up of like, oh no, you don't know this person yet. Don't feel that way. That's too much. It's too soon. You know, all the things that come up around that.
Now, why do you think people are so afraid? Like, oh, it's too soon to say to somebody, I love you. Why do you think that is? Like, I've always been curious about that.
I think it's the most vulnerable, exposed place we can be. You know, when someone says, I love you, and you're like kind of waiting there, like, what? Did somebody say it back to me? Like, did I say it too soon? And it's funny because he said it first to me and it took him a while. It actually took him, I don't know, maybe a couple months to say it, but we were hanging out every day and it was like clear. It was clear that we were in love, but it took him a while to say it. But it's the most vulnerable thing because we've attached so much to it as a society. You know, I think when we really take all the stories away from I'm in love with someone and we look at love and loving someone, like, I fall in love every day with people. Like, I just meet awesome humans and I'm like, oh my God, I love this. Like, and I love this person. I love how you think. I love how you show up in the world. I love how you be. I love your heart. I love your soul. I love your mind. Like, I fall in love all the time. And to fall in love and then choose to be intimate in commitment and partnership with someone to me is totally different. So I think the reason why it's such a big thing is just because society makes it that way. You know, we've been trained that that's like the be all and end all is finding your prince or finding your queen, and then life is good.
Yeah, I think you raise a very important point because there's so many different forms of love. I mean, there's agape love, there's unconditional love, there's just so many different forms that I think you're right when like falling in love and intimacy and how that actually plays in the form of relationship. And I think it comes down to also a choice. Like, I choose to be with this person. I choose to get up every single day and show this person love that I actually really care for. And nobody else in this world is going to distract me from my choice or my focus on this person.
Yeah.
I think that's an important thing. And I know with my relationship currently, I didn't expect it. And I think unexpected kind of love is also one of the most purest at the same time.
Because you're not forcing it.
You're not forcing anything. And I think the past relationship that I did have 2018 leading up to April of 2019, I forced it. And I think it was literally like 2 weeks in, not even, that I said to her that I love you. And she didn't say it back immediately. She's like, what? We've only been dating like 2 weeks.
Right. Like, you're like, oh,
this guy's
back now.
Like, what's going on? But with this one, it just felt natural. It felt organic. And then it was okay to say it. And when we did say it, we both felt the same way. And it wasn't like this, oh, stay away from me kind of thing, like freak out.
And you know, it's interesting too. I think it's like, depending on like who's in your community and who you surround yourself with, like I'm so fortunate and intentional to have created a community around me that's very conscious, very loving, very open, and very expressive. And so when we meet people that we genuinely connect with, we let them know. Like, we don't worry about feeling like, oh my God, you're so intense. We're like, wow, you're like, even the other day I connected with a woman in our industry who we've met once in person, and we've kind of stayed in touch through Instagram. And we've done two calls that are like non-work related calls that are just like, hey, let's catch up. And we had this great call the other day that like went a full hour, and we just went into all the things, and she's married and has kids. I'm married and I have kids. So we're talking about all the things, very real, very raw, very honest. And we left the call. We both texted each other at the same time. Like, that was freaking awesome. Like, I love you, sister. Thank you for your honesty. Thank you for showing up. Like, thank you for the impact you had on me in that 60 minutes. Like, I'm so appreciative of that. And like, if that was a guy and I happened to be sexually attracted to that person and I was single, I would do the same thing, because it's true, you know? And it's like, why are we withholding true information? Just don't attach to it. You know, don't attach to it like, oh, well, if she doesn't text me back the same thing, then I'm the weird person. It's like, no, I actually felt that. And I'm going to honor those feelings and share that with her. Whether or not she feels the same way, it doesn't matter. It's my truth in the moment, and I'm going to share that with her, you know?
Oh, I absolutely love that. He's so good. I feel like I could talk to you for ages.
Keep going.
Two final questions for you. I want to sort of, I feel like we've spoken about some very deep things, very deep topics. So I want to make this one a bit more lighthearted for people and a bit more. Sure. I'm curious, what is the weirdest food combination you've ever tried?
Food combination? Gosh, this is interesting. You know what? I'll say this. The weirdest food I've ever tried, and I don't remember what it was combined with, but I feel like it was like chocolate. It was like chocolate raisin something, but crickets. And do you know why? Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I didn't know it was crickets. Okay. So one of the things they're trialing in like the NGO space is utilizing crickets as a protein source. Because apparently they're like super high in protein, they're really good for you, and they mass populate. So it's like super easy protein source for areas that I know. And I tried, somebody brought it to me, and I think it was like a chocolate something. And they're like, oh, so what do you think? I'm like, yeah, it's pretty good. It's got like an interesting taste, but I like it. I didn't know what it was. And they're like, oh, well, it's made out of crickets. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, is that what it's called? Like the stuff that you use? No, like actual crickets. And I'm like, come on, you're telling me I just ate that? And they're like, yeah. So it's fascinating. And if I knew it was a cricket, I probably wouldn't have eaten it. But that was the most strange thing I've ever eaten, for sure.
A chocolate cricket. Ah, that takes the cake.
Yeah. And I think there were like raisins or there was like some other something mixed in with it. And I was like, okay, this is interesting. But look it up. It's like a whole industry now.
I know they've got cricket flour. They've got cricket pretty much everything now. It's crazy. Like out of this little bug that we squash.
But it, apparently they're this like superfood, and it's so easy to produce, and it's easy on the planet. It's not easy on the crickets, unfortunately, but it's easy on the planet otherwise.
Not easy on the cricket. That's a good
one. Not, no, it's a bad day for the crickets for sure.
Poor cricket.
Yeah.
My final question for you, Alexi, this one is my all time favorite question that I ask everyone at the end. So you've been able to reach the age of 100, and your friends have decided to put together a film for you of everything you've ever said and everything you've ever done. Then ask me how in the world they got it all. We'll call it magic. But
okay,
showed it to you on your 100th birthday. What do you want that film to say and to show about your life?
That I loved with an open heart, and I was truly present, and people could feel that.
That is powerful.
That's it.
I love it. It's a good legacy.
Yeah, great question.
Thank you. Alexi, mm-hmm. It's been an absolute joy and delight to speak to you today. You did not disappoint. Honestly, I've been looking forward to this for a very long time. So thank you so much for your energy, your light, everything that you're doing and putting out there into the world. And thank you for sharing your story on the Storybox podcast.
Thanks for having me. I loved it.
I don't like this part because it means that sadly we have come to an end of yet another incredible story. I just want to say thank you to all of you for tuning in and listening to our guest today. It is my prayer that you would have felt inspired, motivated, challenged in some way, and that you would have learned something new as well. If you'd like to hear more amazing stories like this one, you can do so now by searching up the Storybox on any podcast platform. It's that easy. If you did get something from our guest today, please share it around to a friend or family member that you think could benefit from hearing this powerful story. And before you go, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It will only take 30 seconds and it'll go towards reaching more people. Let's start changing lives through powerful stories like this one. Your support is greatly appreciated. Until next time, when we dive back into the story box, I'm Jay Phantom, and don't forget, your story is worth more than you know. I'll catch you next time.